The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your drinking JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Hey. We're going to start with the recording. First, we have Today in Footy History. And I didn't do any research. Sorry, I've been sick. And Charlie's, it's me and Charlie for the next 2 days. So something happened. Ta-da.
Wait, December? Something mid-December? Something probably happened mid-December in the football world over the years.
Continued. I'll find it.
Okay, yeah. Find out for us. Find out for us, JC. It's Footy Prime. It's a full crew today. We took Monday off, but here we are. I don't really know where we'll go today. We've got some topics. We've got some Canadians doing pretty well across Europe over the weekend. We've got some Players of the Year nominations. We touched on it last week. We could go a little bit deeper there as well. We've got comments, right? It's comments from the YouTubes and from the socials. Get to those two. Where should we start today?
Maybe comments?
Sure. You want to bring one up there, Dubs?
Sure, can do.
You want to handle the comments because my computer's a little bit, that's a long story.
Okay.
It's a little far away from where I usually am and my arm is not that long. Okay, here we go.
Want me to read
sure.
it too?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, wait. Let me make the screen bigger. This is from John Ziegelbauer, 4999. Every player who registers to play soccer in Canada sends money to the Federation, young and old. There is a lot of money there. So I think this was in response to having Sam Rogers on, VP of Philanthropy with Canada Soccer, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of money there. I'm not sure there is.
No.
What I know you pay? Like to think.
What do kids pay now out of their fees? Is it 10 bucks?
13, six, I think it is, isn't it?
Bucks. Is it?
What is it increased, I think, for the first time last year. Is that correct? Because it used to be $9, and now I think it is higher.
Yeah,
so that it burns through that money pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So here's something I just found. So membership and player registration fees brought in about $7.2 million in 2024. Okay? That's reflecting upward momentum going into 2025. Now, there are 800,000 registered players apparently in Canada Soccer, but I've been told that Canada Soccer doesn't know who half these people are. It's very murky, registration and the clubs. So yeah, it looks great when you throw these numbers out, almost a million players across Canada. I've heard that for years, right? I'm sure you guys have as well, but I've been told that it's not quite as clear as that, as the who actually
who told you that.
JC.
Sharms is hearing.
No, well, it's true because you register with your region. You know, say for instance, I'm in York region and I register with Woodbridge or Aurora. That registration goes through them. Then it goes through Ontario Soccer, who you get registered as well. And then it goes into the governing body, which is Canada Soccer. And everybody gets a little piece of it.
Precisely.
Right.
But how much? $7.2 million, apparently.
Yeah.
But I just think it's to say that there's lots of money there. Well, it takes a lot of money to run a program properly. We know that, and it's more than that. You've got to find money elsewhere, which is what they're trying to do right now, and through the philanthropic ways that they're doing that. But this is a slow build.
Can I ask, what was the context of that comment? Sorry, Dubs. Was it just, oh, there's lots of money there, they should go get it? Or this is a weird, corrupt system that is murky, and Sharms is hearing that they don't know where this money's come from. Like, was there any tone in this? Because I didn't understand the if there was tone.
I didn't pull said comment. I think it was a comment Sharms did, I believe. So it was just one that was underneath our podcast talking to Sam Rogers. So
I see.
Addressing that philanthropic sector and saying. I think the context there is just saying there's lots of money already there. And
that's what I'm wondering. I didn't know how to read that. Or was it oh, there's tons of money out there. Go get it. Like,
you know? I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope there is. I mean, we've had chats the last few days at the corporate level, people saying, listen, money is actually beginning to come in now as far as people are making phone calls, finally, into the World Cup and want to get involved. It's taken a while.
Right.
So there is money out there, I think. I think the context of the comment was there's lots in the coffers of Canada soccer and there just isn't.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the murkiness isn't around. They know where their money's coming from. They know where say it's 7.2 million, right? They know where that came from. It's not that murkiness. It's the number of who's playing, 800,000 players playing. Do we actually know that for sure? Mm-hmm. Or is that number's thrown out there a lot, right? Mm-hmm. We actually have, I'm trying to get, and we should have him on very soon, James Johnson, who's Canada Soccer Business's new head honcho. He's been in the job now for a number of months. It'd be interesting to get his perspective. Replacing Mark Noonan, coming from Australia and UK. He's been around the world with various levels, club, FIFA level. It'd be very interesting to get his perspective on what he's seen so far here in Canada. What would you ask him? What would be the first question you ask James Johnson when we get him on? Craig?
Where's the bathroom?
How much money do we need to run all these programs?
Mm-hmm. I think is that a James Johnson question? That's the Canada soccer question, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a corporate commercial.
I would think you'd have to be privy to a lot of the information to do your job properly as one of the main earners for Canada soccer, right? You still have that. You're still under contract. So you would know how much you bring in, where your targets are right off the top. Only to be fair to that organization. That's how you would approach it, I would think. If you're obfuscating from your books and you don't really set goals, then you are going to fail. So,
how's modernizing that deal going?
Yeah, that's the one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's gone quiet, hasn't it? It's gone very quiet.
It has. Mm-hmm.
From both sides, which maybe is a positive.
Or the maybe. Christmas shopping.
We'll get together again in the new year.
Yeah, let's talk in March.
Sure. You don't want that issue, CBAs, etc., clouding the build up to the World Cup. I mean, it happens all the time. It won't just be here, by the way. You're going to see all these various nations go into battle in the build up to FIFA 2026 World Cup or the FIFA. As people
That's right.
FIFA. Yep.
I would also ask him what's his read on like the atmosphere, the climate, more weather analogies, the barometer of kind of the soccer feel in Canada. Like Noonan exits and there was big talk about two expansion teams for CPL. Meanwhile, James Johnson comes in and within a couple of months, there's a new franchise. There's a new team in Montreal, an FC Supra. They made some big signings over the last week, which is great. But you lose one in Valor. You know, so what's his estimation? What's his read on the current situation in Canada in the way of soccer development and as it pertains to their setup and the pro perspective as well in Canada and how it compares to where he comes from? Because he comes from Australia and we always hear the perennial comparisons of Canada to Australia. Is it a realistic comparison that you can make? Is the A-League a good model to base CPL on? Or are we its own thing? Like, are we a standalone nation because of how vast we are, because of how little investment there is in Canada in the way of soccer? And like talking about the corporate thing, like these people waking up because they want to be on this World Cup train, it's too fucking late, right? Like they're going to be in it. But then, like, if we want to be a soccer nation, you have to be in it for the long haul, in it for like the dry spells, in it for the years where it's not the big buzz because you're co-hosting a World Cup. Like, if we want this sport to grow, we need corporate Canada on board, but we also need like the little minnows and the development piece, like going back to the registration. We need it to start from the ground all the way up. And we're going to be in for a wake-up call at the end of this thing that we haven't moved the needle at all. I'm really fearful of that.
Yeah, what is the legacy going to be? Because you're right. It's not so much about who's joining the party now for the big event in June and July next year. It's about who's going to stick around afterwards.
Yep.
That's concerning to me. And just concerning because I don't know. I'm not trying to be negative here. I don't know. But if, you know, Corporation A is throwing a ton of money at various broadcasters to put their name in a nice shiny studio, that's great. But once that World Cup ends and finishes, are they going to stick around and help out and try and keep building the game in this country or not? From a broadcast standpoint, you know, foreign entities just acquire rights to the biggest leagues in the world once again. Or are they going to finance and help finance domestic companies to actually acquire those rights and build the game up? I think I know what's going to happen. It's not great, but prove me otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll move the needle, but just not as much as maybe some people think.
Mm-hmm.
Just another manic Tuesday. Holy shit.
This is coming.
Did we find it?
What's that, JC?
So I think maybe there's just a little bit of ignorance on the part of all these people with money. We found out that the number one sport in Canada that's consumed and that is that people participate in is hockey at 46% of the population. Number two is soccer at 41%. That eclipses football, that other football, that eclipses baseball, everything else. But maybe it's because it's not amplified on our duopoly station setup. Perhaps these, you know, people with the money who could be backing all these sports, et cetera, or backing the World Cup, backing soccer, they don't know this. And perhaps if that was more readily available or put it out there to like, listen, if you really want to make money, 41% is a lot better than 20% who play baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, like get it out there and let people know. Don't make it a secret. Like soccer, it seems soccer is the worst kept secret or the best kept secret in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, if you think about it, there's 20 million people roughly that are playing, watching, consuming soccer in this country, but people don't know that because it's not out there. It's not on the channels. So if these stats were out there, a company might say, well, shit, I want to make more money and I can make more money if there's more people doing it, which there are. So how do we do that? How do we get it out there? How do we educate the people that really this is a viable thing, a very, very viable thing, especially right now?
You've just done it, JC.
Yay! I'll go back to bed.
Mission accomplished.
I mean, Bank of Montreal, they capitalize on football and the numbers and the youth participation. But again, that money is, you know, distributed to different clubs and they don't really know the numbers. They don't really know who they're actually dealing with on the ground, which is disappointing and also a missed opportunity, I think.
That's in Montreal, Craig, you're saying?
Yeah.
Bank of Montreal.
Bank of Montreal.
Scotiabank is massive into football in the region. Yeah. They're one of the biggest, if not the biggest sponsor of CONCACAF.
Yeah. And every time they say BMO Stadium, I'm like, which one? You know, like, because if you're sponsoring two in the same league, it's quite an expense to give naming rights, right? I'm sure we could track that down, but naming rights are not cheap.
Yeah, I like that we're the best secret kept secret in Canadian sports.
Mm.
Soccer. I mean, Footy Prime certainly is.
I was going to say there's a lot of parallels when Dubs is talking.
Yeah.
I'm like,
no, I know.
You're just talking about us.
No, I've got a friend who. No, yeah. It's me.
We're right here, Canadians. We're
assume us and one way or the other.
Shall we move on?
Yes, move on.
All right. This is from Cephalopods.
Oh, I Wonger, like Cephalopods.
Yeah, Wonger now ahead of 99% of people in media world covering Canadian soccer. As we have seen over the past few years, it's a clueless bunch in terms of knowing the business side of the sport, or many have no interest in learning about the business side of the sport. So they take too many things at face value from leakers. Leakers? That's a typo. That should be leaders. Could also be leakers. Yeah, take too many things at face value from leaders, players, and government. Thank you, yeah. Cephalopods, a frequent commenter, right?
Yes.
And yeah, contributor to our YouTube
space. And a supporter of Dan Wong, or it could be that we're all so stupid that even Dan Wong.
Yeah, I, it could be that. Is that bar is so low. Yeah. Well, thank you, or I'm offended, cephalopods.
But you do find it interesting, right? Since you've been welcomed into this dark,
it is
dark
so
world.
Interesting. Yeah, not just the Canadian landscape, but what you're, you, all of you people, you folk have introduced me to in the, no, but I've talked about this before, the model in England, and just like, did I know what the USL was, you know, 4 years ago? And our friend Danny Dicchio is coaching there now. Did I know anything about NSL, CPL, all the above? I mean, it's really been a great initiation. And then all of a sudden, when you pull in the politics of it all, I do have a degree in political science, so it's literally pulls me in on the political level, because you see all the machinations, right? From Gianni Infantini to Infantino to, you know, just, hey, you're dealing with countries and states and investment funds, and you have to navigate this, and we're still being, it's a corrupt system, let's be honest, but we have to live in it. And so even the compromises we have to make, and even the growth of soccer in Canada, we're not always, you know, it was funny because when Craig and I were down in Washington,
you were there?
We were, yeah.
You went to the draw?
No, but I had no idea. There's a story here. It's quite interesting because we're not media, but they see us as media sometimes. We're not like, and I'm talking about Footy Prime. We are part of the zeitgeist in the weirdest of ways, right? Like we're taking, there's a great picture of us, Craig and I, with Kevin Blue, Jesse Marsh, the mayor of Vancouver. And we're having a really nice time, but we're not, you know, we have to talk about this after. If someone would sprain an ankle or say something awkward, would we report it? Would we not? You know, like there's these, it's a strange place to be, but we are now considered media. And I've even been asked to, and I know we're talking about this later on, but Canadian Players of the Year, I had a chance to vote on it. This is the first time in Dan Wong history, because that's how I see the world.
Game's gone.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to get into your locks there. But yeah, it's a valid point, because 10 years ago, you know, when I was working in mainstream network television for a few years, like bloggers, which is essentially what we have evolved from, right, were really looked down upon and had real difficulty getting accreditations, getting, you know, welcome to whatever it is, events, World Cup draws, games. They were seen as the scum. I always thought it was horribly unfair because there were some great writers who actually have now become mainstream writers. But now, be it, there's no such thing as bloggers anymore, right? It's really podcasters. We might have a website, but writing on it, like for, weareforyouprime.com. But we are seen almost as mainstream. Not quite by the sponsors, because the sponsors still want to see that big, shiny studio. But times are changing a little bit. And content is more and more becoming king. And that is more important than how great your suit looks behind a desk. I think. I hope.
Baggy and gray.
I'm banking on it right now.
Baggy and gray on you, your suit.
Not baggy.
I still think
definitely, baggy.
Definitely not baggy. That day we were on Sportsnet when his button looked like it was about to explode. Yeah. And
saggy.
We're talking and we're live, and I'm going, if that thing bursts, that's going right in my grid.
What lay beneath the suit was baggy and saggy. But the suit itself was not baggy and saggy.
No, it was tiger tight.
I want to hear some ladies down in Vegas named Baggy and Saggy.
Baggiest the suit I ever wore or jacket was one of my first ever interviews was with Paul McGrath, the legendary Whoa. Irish Aston Paul Villa. McGrath. Right? You know, what a player. Who are Paul McGrath? And I borrowed Elliot Friedman's jacket. And the fridge is much bigger than me, taller. And it was very baggy on me. But I was very appreciative because I didn't have one.
Sharms was hosting One Soccer, and I told this story before. One Soccer on the day that Canada men's team decided to boycott against Iran, and there was all that fallout. And Sharms didn't realize. I don't think he'd been at One Soccer very often, but his gray suit was the same color as the gray couch. So he's just sitting there trying to stretch this weird, awkward head. Man, a floating head.
Is that a was green really? Screen? No, no, that's sure. Yeah. No, that's, yeah.
I remember that. What, were you there, Jimmy or Craig? You weren't, were you? I don't think that day when we had to fill.
I don't think so.
No.
Just me and Andy and someone else. I think it was, I forget now. I can't remember. Mm. Anyway, that was fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to move on to another comment or do you want to keep
sure. going? Sure. No, I just wanted to say like lots of parallels being drawn between like corporate Canada finally getting on board and Footy Prime and our struggle to find a sponsor. And then you referring to bloggers being kind of fringe and being peripheral and looked down upon perhaps. And then like the media space and the coverage of our sport becoming just everybody in it all together because it's dwindling in a way. And I feel like there's another parallel that could be drawn when we look at our own domestic leagues with less disdain than we do the Bundesliga and the EPL and the rest of world football, that maybe that's the bridge that we have to cross to finally see the sport as legitimate in our country, is that our own domestic leagues, even if the standard of play isn't quite as high as the other aforementioned leagues that I just talked about, that we need to regard them in a much higher level and like with greater esteem and greater respect, because it's a really important part of the growth of the game and the development of the game as it continues. And all of the stuff that we talked about is evolving, things are shifting. And I think that we have to come to terms with what we're producing here at home first and give it its due.
Well, that stat that blows my mind. And I heard it for the first time through Diana. It must've been during the summer sometime, that NSL is considered or very close to being considered top five in the world. Mm-hmm. That is crazy to me. It shows how small women's soccer is, but how it's growing. But a decade ago, there really wasn't, maybe 10 years ago, mm-hmm. much of a women's soccer world out there, very little. But, you know, and now for the NSL first year league to be from attendance, TV, to be at that level, I mean, that's incredible. That may be where you hitch your wagon to. Is that going to, that'll grow quicker, will it, than CPL, for example? Probably.
I think so, because the women's professional game has been around for a long time, but you even see like long established leagues only becoming fully professional. So the injection of funds, the investment, whether you're piggybacking on existing and more traditional men's sport or men's soccer, like long standing clubs, like sometimes that's been to the detriment of the growth of the women's game. So now you're seeing other arenas, other areas, other sort of geographical locations other than Europe really push that standard. And then like I think the investment now in the last 5 years, it's just been exponential in terms of the growth. Mm-hmm. And so Canada, yes, late to the party, but like you're putting together like proper standards for the players. So now the word of mouth, which like the world is so small, like they've seen the proof, they've seen the standard of play. And it's only going to get better as teams shake up their rosters. You've seen, I don't know if you guys have been plugged into it, but mm-hmm. lots of roster changes after year one, lots of movement in terms of the technical staff. And then that's going to be a draw. It's a really attractive place to come and live in Canada, but the league itself has proven that it has aspirations to be top five. You've ticked a lot of boxes in terms of your metrics, but the on pitch is a really attractive thing. And so players are going to try to come to NSL, and it's only going to grow in terms of the Canadian product and the Canadian players that we're helping to push and get to a level where they can start to rattle the cage and maybe press into Casey Stoney's roster, which is a great thing.
But it's a danger that, and we've been over this with the international side of things, once the European teams and maybe the South American teams begin to take it more seriously and throw more money into it and more countries care about it, the danger is they will take over Canada. Right now, you got Spain, you got England, obviously, you know, doing very well, France.
Saudi Arabia.
Throwing money into the women's game, yeah. though. But there's going to be more leagues, though, right, that will stand up and take notice. Mm-hmm. Is that a concern for the NSL? Should be.
No. No? Well, I mean, I think you want competition. And I mean, yes, it's a concern in terms of like that pool of players that you want as the draw, as the star power. Like NWSL is having a bit of a reckoning now in terms of their salary cap and how owners keep the star power in somebody like Trinity Rodman within the confines of the US and within that league. right? And like you're seeing departures, you're seeing them go to WSL to play for quote unquote bigger clubs, and bigger payday, right? Like to get paid more, like they're leaving the US to go and do that. But I think greater competition only helps everybody and helps to grow the game. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a little bit naive, but I do see NSL pushing standards and continuing to grow as the rest of the world also raises its standards and grows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can we go to the next comment?
Yeah, sure.
So this is from Dan Birch, 5834. The Pride match. Oh, great. FIFA isn't involved in that. Big surprise. It's being planned by the local organizing committee in Seattle, and they decided to have it on that fixture before the draw. I hope the ground is full of Pride flags for that match. To be honest, I'm not sure if it's a bad look. It could be a good way to stand up to homophobia or transphobia.
Mm-hmm. Did you see last week, Champions League Slavia Prague against, was it Tottenham? I think it was. Yeah. And Slavia Prague demanded or requested that, was it Spurs? Someone look it up, who played Slavia Prague last week. They remove a pride flag from the where the away fans will be sitting. Oh. And Spurs acquiesced and said, yeah, okay.
Really?
And the explanation was, well, this could look bad. It could end badly.
Spurs.
It could get violent. They could do things to this flag. And it's like, dear God, I think you got to stand up to these people in that situation. So, no, it's our stadium. We'll put a flag wherever the hell we want to put a flag. If you can't trust a certain small minority to behave themselves with a pride flag, maybe they shouldn't be invited.
It's pretty triggering, right?
If you're triggered by a flag.
Yeah. So my point is it's not triggering. Right. It shouldn't be triggering. But I do find it the irony that Iran and Egypt that have laws against, LGBTQ and homosexuality is just, it doesn't stop ringing hilarious to me. And it's so cool that they actually landed on the same day as the Pride match. That makes me smile.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you can do more good in that situation, right?
Yeah.
Sharms, there's another comment that says negative pride. Is this the counter point if there is one?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, this is from DJ Knox, too. Ooh,
he's often inflammatory, is DJ Knox.
Yeah, quite vocal, participates a lot. Pretty amazing how you all suck up to pride games all over North American sport as not being political, but a U.S. president getting a peace prize is very political. Just a little bit of bias, folks. Pride games have absolutely nothing to do with sports, but FIFA has more members than NATO, so a global peace prize every 4 years isn't such a bad idea.
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there?
Uh-huh.
I don't think pride is political at all.
I agree.
Acceptance? Welcoming people to football grounds? Ooh, political.
Yeah, I don't think that's political. The peace prize is definitely political.
DJ Knox, come on. You can't honestly say you watched that World Cup draw, that vomit fest, and say that wasn't political? I mean, listen, if you break away everything else, forget Infantino. What's he doing now?
Infantini.
That's how you can remember it longer.
Yeah, it's Infantino. No. Oh, my God. What's he doing now? Okay. And Trump, remove that from the... Okay, the Peace Prize? Okay.
It's Infantino.
I don't necessarily think it's a horrible idea. It's kind of... It's like second fiddle to the Nobel Peace Prize, right? You have like... It's like the Ballon d'Or and the FIFA Best.
Yeah. Right?
That's what it's like. It's like... The Ballon d'Or was the big one, honestly. He's got the history. That's more important. That's your Nobel Peace Prize. And then your FIFA Best, that's kind of your FIFA Peace Prize, second place. So I can see the argument. And listen, DJ Knox and whoever else, you're absolutely allowed your opinion. Of course you are. I'm not going to denigrate you for it. But I don't think pride is political. And someone can come back at us with this, I'm sure, with a great point, and I'll have to like...
Well, the other thing, Sharms, is the other context he threw in was maybe a peace prize isn't a bad idea. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but you might want to have a committee deciding on it instead of the one guy at the top.
You could be a bad idea.
Yeah, you go.
That's fair.
It's not a horrible idea.
I'm cool. Mm-hmm. Mother Teresa gets a FIFA Peace Prize posthumously.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Who gets the next Peace Prize? MBS?
whoever holds the World Cup.
On the Saudis hosting one soon?
They are.
Right. So probably.
Yeah, odds on.
Yeah.
Who should get it? You know what? Who should get it? On a slot. For navigating the Salah nonsense. He's got the bloody Peace Prize. Hey, listen, come back on the pitch and get an assist. And then wave.
I'm surprised you guys haven't spoken about Mr. Salah.
We did. Do you have a comment? Last week, I think we did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Not in great depth?
No, that's what I meant. There hasn't been a deep dive into whether I was going to ask Craig and Jimmy. I don't know if Dubs would have had that experience, but where a kind of a star player has gone and kind of taken all the air out of the room for a team. Have you ever been in that, for instance, or an example of that, that you were part of?
A little bit, I would suppose, but
with who?
With the Mo Salah thing, I think two things can be right. I agree that he shouldn't have spoke out in the manner that he did. But then I also, from Mo Salah's point of view, I can understand his frustration. This is a guy that's been absolutely unbelievable for the club and their go-to guy, and he deserves a little bit of respect as well. So both things can be right.
£400,000 a week's not respect?
It's a going rate.
Yeah.
He got dropped for three games, Craig. Three matches. Sure. He's not like training with the kids and being banished. He got dropped for three matches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree. But does he deserve a little bit of respect for the guy who has done so much for the club?
But where, I don't see where the lack of respect is. It's three matches and he wasn't playing well. Let me ask you this. Do you think, as he said, given what he's done over the years, which is incredible, one of the greatest of all time for that club, his position is assumed and not earned?
Is it what?
Assumed that he starts no matter what if he wants to start because of what he's done in the past.
No.
That's what he said.
No, I don't think so, but I can understand his frustration.
Jimmy?
I agree with Stacks. Look, I've been in dressing rooms where players have fallen out with managers. Guys have played over 130 games. A new manager comes in and maybe just doesn't fancy him. He's not up to speed where the manager wants him to be. He's not performing. Player gets dropped. Egos start coming out now and they start butting heads. Look, it happens a lot in football. It really does. But it's because we're talking about Mo Salah, one of the best players in the Premier League over the last number of years. You know, if it was some other guy, we wouldn't really be talking about him. Mo Salah is probably looking at him thinking, you know, I do deserve a little bit of respect. Yeah, I'm going through a little bit of slump, but I need to play my way out of this. And Slot's probably thinking, well, I need results or I'm out. So I've got to get the next player in that's going to do the job for me. But you could see after the match the other day when Mo Salah was walking around clapping the fans, they love him. He's an absolute legend there. But at the end of the day, it's about performance. And there's only going to be one winner, and the manager is the one that's going to pick the team. And if he feels that you're not performing, he's not going to play you. It's simple. Because it's easier to get rid of a manager than it is a whole team. And if you've got to work with what you've been given. And if these guys aren't performing and certain players aren't, then you have to bin them.
But Jimmy, isn't the issue here? It's not that he got dropped. I mean, listen, you're right. I know managers and players butt heads all the time, like you said there. But it's the fact that he went public.
Yeah.
That's the problem here.
Because you got to remember as well, as soon as the match is done and during the week, the press are all over the place. They're everywhere. And they're going to be asking questions. What's going on? Why isn't he playing? Mo, what are you doing? And you know firsthand, Sharms, they're going to probe and probe and probe and wait for you to say one thing and then they're going to jump on it. And sometimes it's that spiral effect where it just keeps going and going and going and gets blown out of proportion. And you know, the club's got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it. Manager does. And then you got to start answering the questions. It's hard to run away from that and not say anything when Mo Salah's not been dropped for three games.
Mm-hmm. Most of it's done usually behind closed doors. That's where you're going to have a go at the manager or state your case, not so much publicly. I think that's where.
Yeah. Well, then Mo Salah, I mean, Dubs, Mo Salah, he doesn't speak to the media. He rarely speaks to the media. When he does, it's because he's after something. And listen, I love Mo Salah. As a Liverpool fan, how can you not? But I'm not a sucker. He's not the beautiful, smiling face, wonderful, wonderful teammate, manager's dream that a lot of people think. He's difficult. Even Jurgen Klopp said, this guy's difficult to manage. When he's playing well, he's a dream. Mm-hmm. When he's not, he's tough. That's fine. You can have both and still love the guy. Mm-hmm. But let's not paint him a certain way as being just wonderful and great when he threw this team under the bus at a very low point. Wasn't the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really selfish move, which is often what you see with these types of players who are stars and then everything is provided to them, right? And everybody kind of, they say jump and everybody else says how high. So I think he could have come out and he could have expressed his frustration at his situation and the team struggling in a way that didn't put other people under duress. You know, like where he could have just said, this is a very difficult situation for me. It's a difficult time for the team. But not say that he's being scapegoated and being thrown under the bus. Because as you said, in so doing, he just turned the tables and then put the rest of his teammates and his coach and the organization under pressure, which is probably, you know, a little bit by design. But I think it's important when you're talking about players like this, is that like his legacy's never in doubt. Right. As a Red, as at Anfield and for Liverpool. But when you're evaluating as Arne Slot, as that manager, you're not putting him on that team sheet because of what he's done for the club historically. You're putting him on the team sheet because of what you need right now. And at that point, like you're along with, you know, the 20 some odd other players in that he's looking at to see who can get me 3 points here. And if it's not Mo, who when Slot came in, he said, I need you to relieve me of the defensive duties so that I can save my legs so that I can go forward. And they broke and with success on the counterattack, right, on their way to the title last year. And they've not done it this year. And it's been more difficult and there's more tactical nuances to it than just that, than less sort of production on the counter. But Mo Salah hasn't been involved, right?
Yeah. Do you know, when you look at it, though, in England – The press is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Sky Sports, BBC, football, you know, team talk. All so much is going on over there. And they always try to analyze it. And then a lot of the times they jump to conclusions. So going back to what Charms, you were saying, he doesn't really do much with the media. But you can't get away from it over there because it is in your face constantly, right? The teleprompter's coming up and reading things. Do you not think it was a time where he just went, you know what, enough's enough here, and I need to stand up for myself because I'm getting ridiculed here. I'm taking a lot of abuse, and people don't really understand what's happening in this situation. And he's defending himself.
Could be. I mean, listen, he mentioned Jamie Carragher, right, by name. Mm-hmm.
Of course, because you can't get away from it. You'll see it all the time.
And you can defend yourself. I'm 100%. It's within his rights, but I think there's more to it than that. It wasn't just a guy who had enough. I think, honestly, the timing – a week before he leaves for AFCON, and then he comes back right in the middle of the transfer window amid much speculation from the media, admittedly, that Saudis are once again sniffing around. I mean, ask you this. Do you think he's back? Jimmy, do you think he's done at Liverpool? Do you think he's going to be playing somewhere else in February?
I think he's definitely weighing up his options at the moment. That's for sure. And I think, you know, him getting away playing with the national team will give him a chance to breathe, maybe have a little bit of clarity and make his decision. But I think this is going to be a decision that he has to make with the family and decide what they want to do and what they see next. But there's no doubt in my mind, he loves Liverpool. He loves the fans, loves wearing that jersey. But maybe sometimes, you know, as we all know, you know, good things have to come to an end at some point.
And Jimmy, you know as well as anybody when, you know, you have such a great few seasons and then things start to go a little bit sideways and the results aren't coming in as well. If they're winning games, this isn't such a problem. Maybe it is for Mo Salah, but it's not such a problem. But when things are going sour everything seems to come across part at the seams. And then you really start to see people's character, not when they're winning, but when things aren't going quite as well, you see people's character pops out.
No, you're 100% right. And that's when the fingers start getting pointed, isn't it?
Yeah. Right?
Nobody wants to take accountability. It's always somebody else.
Do you think it's back, Craig? Job Dubs, do you think it's back at Liverpool? Or do you think it's off?
I think there's every chance he could be gone in January.
Yeah, I agree. And can you imagine how those comments would have landed? Like, he's garnering a lot of criticism for it, but he's also garnering a lot of sympathy, you know, from pundits, from fans alike, right? Like, I don't think his legacy is tarnished as a result of that move, which was extremely selfish. But can you imagine if he'd come out and done that and Liverpool was still sort of middling or even a little bit more successful than they have been this season? Like, he would be absolutely crucified for it. And you wonder then, like, the how calculated he would have been if he'd still gone and done it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think it's not the first time a superstar has done this. Roy Keane did it at United. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo's done it. I think
38 times.
Right? I don't think we look at their careers any differently. We understand there's more of a nuance to the character, perhaps, than just the footballer.
Sharms. When Ronaldo was at Man United the last time, he did it every weekend. What are we talking about? Every week, there'd be another reason, right?
He wasn't that bad.
I was just thinking, it's a great redemption story if he comes back from AFCON and is all in and starts playing well again. And everyone loves a redemption story. Mm-hmm. It's also quite interesting to me. You know, Jimmy talked about the press and it's spiraling. But Dubs said by design and strategic is what I think Sharms was inferring, because he doesn't talk to the media. So it'd be interesting to see, was this by design or was this, you know, I'm sick of this shit and I'm going to give them an answer whether they like it or not from my heart, right? Yeah. But then people are making it, oh, he only talks to the media and him and his agent. Mm-hmm. So that's what's interesting to me, that little TSN turning point, you know, where it's like, fuck it, I'm in, or I've got this all planned. Let's see what happens when I go off to Africa to play in the tournament.
Listen, within Footy Prime, Jimmy and my reputations are on the line here, right? if he returns to Liverpool, Jimmy's right. 100%. I'm the arsehole.
Yeah.
If he ends up in Saudi, guess who the arsehole is? Not me, Jimmy. You know, imagine that. I mean, listen, I know Karim Benzema's there. He's Muslim, superstar. But if for Mo Salah, a Muslim, to go to Saudi Arabia and to play there, I mean, that is putting him on a new level. And I think maybe. I wouldn't blame him at all. But honestly, from a personal standpoint, as much as he makes obscene money already, I don't blame the guy at all. If he goes over there and makes double that, $1 million a week, pounds. Well, it wouldn't be pounds. Get pound. If you're playing in Saudi, what are you paid in? Probably US dollars, I bet.
Euro?
I don't know. Drachma?
Craig had a William Hill account when he first moved to Toronto, so he was still had a English bank account. So, but they were paying you in Canadian drachma, right, Craig? At Sportsnet.
Drachma deal.
That's right. I only deal in drachma.
Dubs, you got another comment there?
I think so. Let's see here.
That wasn't even from a comment.
No, not really. Did you want to go to the player of the year?
Yeah, sure. All right. So the finalists, Ali Ahmed, Tejan Buchanan, Jonathan David, David, Richie Larea, Tani Olawosha, Nico Seeger, and Dane St. Clair. I put my mine in yesterday.
And if you're listening to this part of the show, please share with us your Canadian players of the year. This is your chance to put together a top three. You had to choose three players ranked. So look at the award nominees and throw it down in our YouTube or in our Apple or Spotify.
And let us know who your Footy Prime person of the year is and rank us from 1 to 3.
No,
or don't please do don't. That.
Please. You know who's winning that one?
Yeah.
JC.
JC, exactly. okay, well, listen, Ian, I think we can probably say goodbye to each other for another day.
Sure.
What shall we do tomorrow? Oh, we may have a guest tomorrow, maybe. Working on guests for this week, but we'll wait and see.
I'm going to reach out to Mark Schwartzer for Thursday or Friday.
Okay. Yeah. That's great. We've got a lot of names making the rounds. This is the time of year you need interviews, right?
Because Mo Salah. Let's get him on. Let's see if he wants to talk to
him. We'll make the call. Sure, I'll be all over it. Yeah. I tell you what, he will be talking to Egyptian media a lot during AFCON, I bet you. So it could be interesting, some things, what he says. All right, everyone. Well, that's Footy Prime. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed it. We're back tomorrow with something and someone. Fun will be had by all. Whoever shows up anyway. All right, everyone. Cheers for watching. Bye. Oh, yeah. Like and subscribe and all that stuff. And leave comments, as you know, from this show. We do read the comments out. Mm-hmm. Good and bad.
Mo Salah shouldn't read the comments. That's the problem. Mo Salah, stay out of the comments section.
He does. He thinks he's still the best player in the world.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
Thanks to
today, on December 16th, 1899, Italian football club AC Milan was founded as Milan Football and Cricket Club by Englishmen Alfred Edwards and Herbert Kipling.
Football and Cricket Club.
Nice. He was actually from Nottingham as well.
Oh, really? Nice. Notts County, good cricket team back in the day. Anyway, thanks, JC.